If you'd like to sponsor an episode of our podcast, or you have something exciting you want to promote, please send inquiries to Nathan@UtilityMuffinLabs.com. We have several packages and options to work with any budget. We specialize in working with community content creators, and we will write and produce unique, individualized material for your events, books, or your products. Again, email Nathan@UtilityMuffinLabs.com for details. By Night Studios presents April 24th and 25th, 2020, the Mind's Eye Theater event of the season, Blood and Betrayal, Redemption. Join us at the Abbey in downtown Orlando for an evening of intrigue, politics, and personal horror in an immersive live-action experience. Forge a new chapter in the World of Darkness Chronicle as you reveal the hidden secrets and twisted machinations of the Ivory Tower. Blood and Betrayal, Redemption, a premium Vampire the Masquerade LARP event. Go to By Night Studios. For tickets. Fans of our podcast use promo code MET25 for 10% off ticket prices. That's MET25 for 10% off. Blood and Betrayal Redemption. ByNightStudios.com. This is 25 years of Vampire the Masquerade. A retrospective podcast brought to you by UtilityMuffinLabs.com. Welcome to the Dark Ages. Welcome to another episode of 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. My name is Nathan.
And I am Bob.
And today we are taking a deep dive at Bitter Crusade, a chronicle for Vampire the Dark Ages. And before we get started, Bob, how are you today?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm pretty good. I was just telling you about some very hot chili I had, because apparently when you freeze things and thaw them, that makes them more spicy. I don't know the dynamic behind it.
Conversely, it's the utter insanity of eating healthy yogurt, right? Greek yogurt for breakfast. Yeah. And then you add like this protein substance with it, but even though it's a protein, like it's like recommended everywhere that this is super healthy. It's protein for your protein.
Your protein substance.
It's a granola, right? Well, because you can do whatever you want. You chop up anything and put it in whatever. And I'm like, well, it's the morning. We'll kickstart it. We'll get a decent filler. So I won't be hungry for a while and all that other stuff. And I'm like, it's all right. It's good. But at the same time, I'm like, it's like double protein.
Well, I just want, you know, protein's good for you, right?
No, because there's a whole bunch of other nutrients you should have. But I want like, you know, potassium is a banana, you know, but basically I was just thinking they should come with an all-in-one powder.
I mean, there probably is one out there, right?
Not really. There's no money in it. If you get a powder that's all-in-one, or if you get one that claims to be all-in-one, I'm talking about your total nutrition, right? We know what nonsense you're going to eat throughout the day, right? Everybody does. But if you knew that in the morning, I just dropped this in my drink, it's going to taste bad. But it's all the amino nonsense and vitamins and BS that you need to get in your system for the day, you're golden.
So let me ask you a hypothetical.
Yeah.
If you could, right, and everybody that's listening, feel free to think about this too, in your dietary needs. It has nothing at all to do with vampire, but, you know, you could make spins. If you could get a pill, or let's say a dozen pills, right, and you take those pills throughout the day, and they give you all your nutrition, they fill you up, you never feel hungry, but you had to give up food. You could never eat food again. Would you do it?
Now, that's a deep question. And let me tell you, never will happen. But if you could.
Right.
But if you could, yeah. Yeah.
Purely hypothetical.
And I'm telling you why. Freeze up time.
Yep.
Right? Freeze up BS. And I'll get into that. There are foods that are good. They're really good. But when you think of it from the intelligent angle, that the only reason why we have culinary chefs and people using all same basic ingredients but different styles of food, it's so we eat it.
Right, so we don't get bored.
Right, and so it's like, you know, it's a thing that, oh, it's fun to do, yeah, but if it was gone? I mean, I'm just saying, it's a deep question. But to the point, it actually, and people are thinking we totally staged this, we didn't, it directly relates to the Bitter Crusade that we're about to talk about. I know what you're thinking. How? It's simple. If anybody's ever heard of the Fourth Crusade, you know that it was basically a testament of mercantilism. That's what it is. I mean, this crusade's back gets broken because it's based on the merchants who are involved in this. They rip the heart out right out of the nobility in a time when you really wanted to make sure your debts were paid. And when they weren't, they pull support. And that's history. It doesn't ruin the whole book. I didn't sum it all into one. But it directly relates to that because I'm willing to bet more than a few kings sat back. I wish there was a way that I could just feed these people with, like, grain. That's all they needed. The grain never spoiled or whatever, but just take it. Just, you know, go kill people for me.
Right.
And, you know, that would be the hope.
One of the compelling things about this story, too, and we'll get into it in a minute, but one of the compelling ideas is the loss of that dream, right? The idea, the dream that vampires, mortals, whatever, can coexist, that vampires can create a system that is profitable and harmonious with all involved. But like I said, we'll get into that in a minute. Now, before we get into that, I actually have another hypothetical, and I was actually not quite sure if we had covered this before in a different podcast, but I saw it on our Patreon. And Tony asked us this question, and I haven't ran it past you, so you don't know what it is, but Tony has a challenge, and he says, White Wolf pulls a dump truck full of money up to Utility Muffin Labs, i.e. Nate and Bob, and I don't know why they would do that, but stating that they want to redeem the True Bruja for the next supplement. What do you do to salvage what might be the most loathed bloodline in Vampire the Masquerade history? And also, are they the most loathed?
Oh, I apologize to all you 25 dedicated ever waiting for the Bitter Crusade, because he just asked for my soapbox. And by God, I'm standing on it. Here's the deal. The True Bruja are garbage. They're utter trash the way they're written, and I'll tell you exactly why. It was an attempt, and a poor one, to pull attention from vampire players to Mage the Ascension. Nobody can contest the fact that the Time Sphere in Mage the Ascension is exactly where Temporis' ideas came from. But Mage wasn't as well known, and it's a supplement they wanted off the ground. And they just couldn't get people to follow it. So what they did was, they took the most popular clan, which is Clan Bruja, that had these strong two opposites, right? The Iconoclast versus the Idealist. And then when the Dark Ages came out, they opened up a very Hellenistic approach to it with the Carthaginians, and they said, hit the pause button. What if, just saying, what if we could turn back time and correct some of this nonsense? And you could tell that's where this came from, right? I'm imagining some magical pitch was given to where they're like, well, let's take the two popular and see if we could salvage the lesser, right? And bring that up to the main stage. Well, how do you do that? Well, what if when the Brewer Antediluvian comes out the gate, his Methuselah children just kills him? And then it causes a rift, right? And then, like, why would he do that? Well, because the intellectuals, they just wanted to study history and learn about life and vampire and blah, blah, blah this way. Meanwhile, the rest of the Brewer clan were all about rebellion and blah, 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 like they typically know. And they went, well, there's going to be people that just want to play idealists that have nothing to do with Avengers. Because, yeah, but we could do this.
Right.
And we could pitch, and I'm willing to bet we could get people to like it. And someone went, look, man, we told you you had a spot. I guess you could write it. Just go write it up. We need a filler, I guess. Just let's see what you get. He's like, came back. I got Temporis. This is going to cause a problem with a guy later on down the road, but go ahead. And I'm referring to me. And that's exactly where it came from. Nobody can contest it because the evidence is in front of you. That's why the True Bruja don't have a lot to them. They can't have a lot to them. You have the Bruja clan as their point of origin. And that is also why the True Bruja are supposed to be enemies of the Bruja clan, because of some ridiculous two people do not start a war for anybody that ever comes after. Like, I want you to think about this. The True Bruja are taught intellectuals, right? Practice entelechy, right? That's the thing. By the way, it's a philosophy that's existed with mortals normally in the real world.
Right.
I'm tired of people telling me the True Bruja made intellect. No, they didn't. They're philosophers who made this. Get out of here. Like, let's just stop right here, okay? Know your history before you weigh in this conversation is what I'm saying. But the point is, it gets mentioned. I'm like, triggered. But anyway, we move on through this, and I sat and I said to myself, I was like going, okay, so if I had to salvage them, and that's the question, is how do you make them completely unique? Number one, we don't call them True Bruja.
Right.
Because that's childish unto itself. No, we're intellectuals. We're the True Bruja.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like something that, someone who actually was descended from an antediluvian and the main clan was calling themselves Bruja, it doesn't seem like something they'd cling to.
It just sounds like a tantrum. You know, like, they would know where the trooper hop. But yeah, but they would say it with, like, the Vulcan, what is it, the Spockalo thing? We're the trooper, huh? Yeah, okay, great. We're like, no, that's the portray that you were given. Pardon me. But I would say they are salvageable, in particular when you see that they agree. Whether it was someone on between Mon Diff and Sonic's Path, I forget who grabbed a hold of that update and threw him in for the Dark Ages V20. And when you look at it and you read them, you're like, all right, they calmed them down. This doesn't seem not as wonk. There's potential here. And then you also get to the fact that they're not, like, forced to be any one particular thing. They're just this bloodline. Right. And in true form, if you think about it this way, if they're going to update the V5 material and say that the Hikata are the Semeti, the Giovanni, the Cappadocians,
and the Agaraja, dealing with death and stuff like that, yeah.
And they're going to come out and say carte blanche and just go, by the way, we're all just Cappadocians. I want you to let that resonate a minute. If they're all part of the same clan, just fragmented, and you're dealing with... When you have those factions like that, it means the clan's warring. And when they all become the Hikata, they're trying to force another union to get back that power they lost by killing each other, by warring with each other. Right. That's what that is. Now look at the true Bruja. Ideally, at some point, one of those idiots in the true Bruja clan goes, you know, I'm tired of it. I run around trying to kill these people, and for what? The Antediluvian's dust? Not even a thought?
And not even actively trying to kill other Bruja, just sort of like harboring a grudge.
Just we're pissed for no reason. Right. And then
we're just kind of better than the rest of you Bruja.
Just think of that statement. Why is it that two people do something and for all time you have to hate anyone that ever joins your club? Just think of that. Right? Honey, I love you, but if I make you like me, you gotta hate these people too. And I'm like going, why haven't the super sensitive of the now ever jumped on this?
Right.
Like, to me it sounds just like indoctrination into any gang mentality ever. But I'm gonna say this, you gotta dig deep to get there and you gotta care enough, and the true Bruja don't even bring that out. So, in essence, I'm hit with a bag of money. Here's the repair. Short and sweet, because I see Nate like, all right, I get you. Here's the deal. To repair them, name goes away, and all you do is give them a progenitor that steps forward that corrects the scale. Someone steps up and says, it's actually my power, and what they're using is a watered-down version. I'm shocked it mutated, or however you want to do it. But that's what's great about fiction. Someone can come forth and gout. If we can make Dominate into Dementation, we could take Temporis and make it something else. And you bring that clan, and it's done. Right, exactly.
Right.
Something like that, and then give them a unique weakness. What if their weakness has nothing to do? What if their weakness is Temporis-esque? Right. Like, they have a real issue. When they stare off and suddenly look at something like Torador do, these guys contemplate Pythagoras.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, in the past, they're having a Socrates debate.
What if you, instead of giving them time travel... You take since V5 seems to be very fond of taking base powers, base disciplines, and adding little intricate parts to them, make parts of celerity that deal with time, deal with either the passage of time or the understanding of time, but give them a weakness that instead of what the Bruja have, which is they're, you know, prone to rage and they have a low threshold of self-control. Instead, theirs is such that they have a hard time with their conscience, right? They're so cold and calculating that their issue is conscience. They allow terrible things to happen around them because they're just so disconnected, right? So they're more likely to lose their humanity because of their inability to feel emotions like the opposite of the Bruja.
And I got the name of their clan discipline, too. It should be called the TARDIS.
The TARDIS. God damn it, Bob. You just lost all credibility. No, but I think something that makes sense is, well, first of all, I think that they cured the true Bruja in Revised when they destroyed the Black Hand. When they destroyed the true hand, like the true Bruja, to me, that's it. It's done. You wash it away. So if we haven't done away with the true hand, and the true hand still exists like they do in V20, and obviously if they do in V20, then they must exist somewhere in V5. Maybe it's time that you take all of those individuals that belong to a sect, and they're a bunch of bloodlines, because I think V5 has shown us they're going to be doing their rock solid best to get rid of bloodlines. just take that whole true hand, that whole club, and turn them into a bloodline. Turn them into something that was spawned from something else, right? And of course, get rid of Temporis. It's stupid. It's pointless. It will never exist outside of V20. I think it's a redundant discipline, and make it Celerity. So, yeah, that's not very nothing about that was like, oh my god, they broke ground. But yeah, I think you can make them similar to the Blue Hobbit, but different.
We broke ground, made a stance. Although I would say I have always made this stance. it brings insight, and in answering a question, it gives why we don't like, it gives what is broken, it gives what you can do to fix it, and more importantly, if we were hit with a bucket of money, yeah, we'd spend the time to iron it out, make it look good, and pitch it better. But the point is, we weren't. So hypothetically, we were given money. Hypothetically, we gave you the answer.
We had 5 minutes to contemplate it. I feel you'll find that's a fully realized story. So, all right, moving on from that. Thank you, Tony, for your question. Hopefully that was entertaining. Next, we just need to give some shout outs to some of our new Patreon backers. If you don't know, you can back us at patreon.com/25yearsofvampirethemasquerade. And these are some folks that in February thus far have decided to help support our podcast. MM, thank you. Thomas, H-O-G-U-E, Hogue. Not sure how to pronounce that. My apologies. Thank you. C. Rustovich, also known as Big Papa. He has been a Patreon backer before and has decided to come back. Thank you. Brandon, thank you. 307RPG. And just today, Kenneth Kimbrough, spelled K-M-B-R-O-U-G-H. Hopefully I pronounced that as well, or properly as well. I appreciate that. Bob's looking at me like I've got three eyes.
No, if it's Kimbrough. I like the name. It's close to Kane, bro. And I think it works, Kimbro. Yeah.
So he actually sent us a message. So I'm gonna read this real quick. It's not a question. It's just like a thank you to us. He says, your show has been a wonderful resource for me as a storyteller. It's given me ideas for research, skills for improv, and courage to write. You always make me feel like I could be doing more to tell a good story. In the lead up to the chronicle I'm writing, I've gathered maps of Philadelphia, made infographics for players, and read the V5 core book front to back. Somehow, I still feel underprepared, yet weirdly fine about it. Vampire has been therapeutic for me, and for us too, encouraging me to socialize and practice self-confidence. Your podcast has helped me take the megalomania out of storytelling and to trust players. Thank you for doing the work. I look forward to the next episode. Well,
Okay, I'm done. That's it. I've achieved my goal, and I'm dead serious. Well, I'm not dead serious about stopping, but absolutely, that's... I started this with Dane, and I said just that. If we could do exactly what he said, was take the megalomania out of storytelling and bring the community... That's a goal.
Yeah.
That's definitely a goal.
I mean, the truth of the matter is, and I think most people probably get this from listening to us, is that, yeah, sometimes we read these books, we clown on them, but the whole point is... We read these books to help you decide what you need or what you want when you run your own chronicle. All we want out of this is for you to say, screw it, I'm going to run my own game, or screw it, I'm going to take the chance and actually play this game. That's it. Like, it's a hobby we love. We want to share with you. Hopefully we've done that to some degree. Let's do review.
I felt Nate, as much time as you could to take away from this. Up front, full disclosure, this is another slog for us.
Yeah, it's
another slog for us because it's a chronicle. We drag a little bit. So the Bitter Crusade, just to get through it, because he's about to ask me anyway, so I'm just going to telepathically receive the message. Mm-hmm. It is a book that takes you from the actual Fourth Crusade and the Cainite nonsense that follows that going through. And it starts with the Cainites arrogantly believing that they could benefit from the mortal effort, the war effort that they got going on. Now, what's going on during this time period? We know about the conquest of the Venture Clan, right? The fall of Rome really galvanized them into trying to grab quickly more power to solidify what they had and keep adapting to what the mortals are creating, what they're becoming now. And that's that. And it's taken them all the way through Transylvania, you know, parts of Russia. They're trying to get everywhere they can, to where they're the ones on top. And this crusade's no different. It's another attempt and a launch to do just that. And they're a part of it. However, there's some toes they're stepping on, And I don't care. I'm going to jump and just mention my favorite all-time written, best-rounded, ultimate character, hands down, bar none. Vico sucks by comparison. I'm angered that this guy doesn't get the attention he has, is the Fiend Coban. If you have never heard of Coban, you internet search it now. You just pause, you internet search it now, and you look at it. This is a Voivode. Rustavich is a B.I.H. by comparison, okay? It's great Rustavich exists, and yeah, he holds a candle, and he was up there with the werewolf, did the Shadow Lord Visp want to be. This dude captures, Coban that is, the essence of the everything written about the Zemis is what Coban is.
Uh-huh.
Pound for pound. Debate, please. Tell me now.
I don't have a debate. I mean,
you can't, because you're Nate.
No.
And Nate looked at that and said, I would love to play this guy.
I actually, you know, I wasn't as impassioned by any of the characters in this book as I was just like the story of the three different stories of this book and how each story as a whole affected me differently, but I couldn't find cohesion to give a shit that the three stories existed together in a book. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, because there's a reason why I like Fiendish Winter, obviously, because Coban's in it.
Yeah, but it's a great story.
But here?
Right. It's So let's talk about how this book starts, right? It starts with this story called Venetian Knights, and it's basically what you were talking about, where you're like, oh, all these vampires, all these Cainites get together and falsely assume that they can somehow ordain where the Fourth Crusade is going to go, as if they have any control over shit. And that's actually the part that I like about this story, is that it shows you, here's a bunch of individuals, here's a bunch of scary monsters that think that somehow they can control what humans do. Something as massive as a crusade. They're like, let's debate. Let's talk about where it's going to go. And then the best thing possible happens. By the end of the meeting, they're like, oh, it's going wherever it wants to go, and we didn't do anything of value or worth. That's the only thing about this story I like. The rest of this story, to me, this first chapter takes the concept of the Fourth Crusade as a MacGuffin, as a reason to gather all of these vampires into one area and solve a murder mystery. That's right. What it is to me. And this is something I'd asked you about before, and I figured I'd mention it here so we can lay it out on the table. Something I've noticed, especially in these Dark Ages books, is there seems to be a propensity for creating a thing to kill vampires that's never mentioned before and never mentioned after. What's up with that?
I think my answer, I still stand by it. I think it's writer's hubris. I think it's that somebody finally gets to write in a book and be a part of it, and they want to make their mark in history. And they're trying to make their mark so well that fans love it so much, it calls them back. The company has to hire them again to work on more supplements because they love that idea so much. And it's a gamble. When you roll the dice like that, you are literally, you know, maybe not. Because what a company wants is consistency. Right, yeah, they want everybody to be pleased consistently, so that more new material can be built in gradually to keep everyone entertained. And they went for the Game of Thrones pop.
Yeah,
and that's what it is.
Before Game of Thrones was a thing.
Exactly, and it's one of those things where it's like, if it hits you and you loved it, well, we got you 10 people who were just thrilled with it, but everyone else is like, what?
Let's take a minute and talk about this episode's sponsor, shall we?
Sure, sounds good. This episode's sponsor is By Night Studios' premium live-action role-playing event, Blood and Betrayal Redemption.
Blood and Betrayal Redemption brings you, the player, into the heart of the Camarilla's intrigues, politics, and personal horror. Blood and Betrayal is a semi-annual LARP event produced by Night Studios and is the official By Night Studios Vampire the Masquerade Chronicle.
That means the things you do as a player will affect the future of the Chronicle and the World of Darkness as a whole. This event is designed for both long-term veterans to live action and new participants to LARP. You don't need to know anything about previous Blood and Betrayal events to go and get involved.
I want to mention a few of the major design elements that have gone into the development of this event. First, player agency is a major component of the story. How many times have you gone to a LARP or game and it's clear at the end of the night it didn't matter what choices you made? Well, the storytelling staff has paid special attention to this dilemma. They are setting events in motion, but your choices will determine the outcome of the night.
Cooperative storytelling is a major part of that, too. A major focus for the BNS storytellers is the collaborative efforts to make an interesting, dramatic, and personally satisfying experience for everyone.
And that goes a long way towards building that immersion piece, which is so important to LARP.
But they don't sacrifice potential safety to provide it. BNS use several techniques to ensure games stay safe and fun for everyone.
Blood and Betrayal Redemption will be at the Abbey in Orlando, Florida on April 24th and 25th, 2020. There are a bunch of packages available that give you added bonuses and goodies. You can check those out at bynightstudios.com. When you purchase your tickets, be sure to use our promo code MET25 to get 10% off. It'll really help our show if you use the code, so it's an easy way to support us while enjoying the premier Vampire the Masquerade event of the season.
Once again, use promo code MET25 when you purchase your tickets for 10% off to support the show.
Thank you to By Night Studios for sponsoring the episode, and now, back to the show. So one of the key plot points in this, and I'll just share it for everybody. Of course, you'll read it and get your own impressions. But one of the key plot points is the Asimites are in town. We're in Venice, by the way. And the Asimites are in town. And boy, howdy, they are bound and determined to kill this follower of Set that is pretending to be a Ventru.
Boy, howdy.
The reasons why are very meaningless. However, when your coterie arrives in town, they're handed this white flower with these red veins in it. And I believe it's called bloodroot, right? And what we find out later is that this bloodroot is a very rare flower that can be used to poison vampiric blood and kill them. And now, I was like, oh, that's weird. That's very interesting.
It's mentioned elsewhere. I know there are people or flowers like it who's mentioned in the first edition Asimite Clan Book, where it was one of the tools that they could use to coat their weapons to stop canines from healing, straight up poison them, blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
However,
right.
Why the hell? I still stand by you. It's mentioned in here as like one of the tools that could kill, right. Or you could use an axe.
Or you could use your own Asimite blood. Because like it's not like it like because one of the things that they show in here, his body is found. This Ventru follower of Set, his body is found, and his body shows all the signs of having been poisoned. Right, he's like leaking black dust from his mouth, and there's an incision in his neck where he was stabbed without being aware. And I'm like, okay, I get that that's a thing that you could do with this flower, but also I kind of feel like it's a thing you could do with your Asimite blood. And it would show the same symptoms. And there's like one individual in the city who's like, I've heard of this. It's the bloodroot flower. It's this rare flower that you guys happened to be carrying when you walked in. And why it really annoys the shit out of me is because even the author's like, the evidence is very flimsy. And I'm like, because the writing is very flimsy. They have a flower that one guy knows can kill. Like, why wouldn't they think, oh, he was assassinated by an Asimite? Because look at him. He's fucking dead and leaking black dust. Don't know why.
Don't forget, there's currently a war going on. Where what's happening? You have Asimites diabolizing elders in reputation all over the known world, as far as people are concerned. They're a terror. They're in town. We're all going to die. It's like, no, we're only here for this one Egyptian.
Yeah.
No, he's a follower of Set. We don't know if he's Egyptian.
So that stuff annoys me, right? I won't get into the story because you folks can read it. But that's one thing that annoys me. But the other thing that annoys me is that there are these, benchmark canon characters, Lucida and Fatima Al-Fakadi. And it seems like they're just written in to be like, see, look at them, premier characters.
No. Lucida and Fatima are actually in here, so you can see the budding romance that they have later on in the future.
Yeah, it starts how they interact. Here. Yeah, it's cool.
It's their interaction in here is direct, how they, I believe Fatima writes her poetry.
Yeah.
And leaves it out here talking about how her life is boring and she wishes that she could do something else other than kill in the name of Hakim like she loves. But that's just what they put out there. Did you get the part where Lucida was like, don't worry, just meet me at this lovely bistro. We could have a calf and we could sit back and we could chat about your poetry. Because I think you might have meant it for me, but I feel the same way because I'm trapped by my sire. I'm forced to be here by the Amici Noctis. You know, they forced me to be here. Point is, you didn't see that chapter, Nate?
No, because Bob's making it all up.
completely, completely as we go along. I just wanted to make a very appointed point
it's a
there.
That's stone it. Cold whodunit. And it is very stereotypical. The prince knows you didn't do it, highly suspects you didn't do it, and wants you to go and find out who did. You've got whatever, 3 nights, 2 weeks, doesn't matter. Time's inconsequential because it's linear. You'll go and you'll find the Asimite, and the Asimite will help you kill a guy, and then he'll kill you or try to kill you because he does. It's so. Anyways, this first chapter to me is the epitome of what I find to be bad about most of these style of stories. It's to me, it's poorly thought out. And it's just like, what? Why do we got to invent shit so vampires can kill each other?
I often had a suspicion that these were the novels that didn't get made.
Yeah.
Right? They were right. supposed to, and they're like, well, we really can't find a good story back. Can we sell it as a module? Yeah. Chalk it in a book thart. Let's right. salvage. And that's right. and that's where it comes from. But the point is, I still think this entire book, first off, I'm gonna say ahead of time. Uh-huh. It's a good book.
Yeah.
Only if you want a down and dirty what the Cainites did to get involved with the Fourth Crusade. Yeah. There's a ton written about the Fourth Crusade.
Yeah.
And you could check it out. It's a gigantic disaster. Yeah. But you can read to see why that is,
right.
sparing the history points. But the important thing about it is just what Nate said, just to catch everybody up from our nonsense. It's all the vampires met in hubris, believing they could dictate where the Fourth Crusade's going to go. And, of course, they can't do anything about it. And it ends up being a call to go where?
To Dalmatia.
That's, well, why? Right? That's what they're thinking, right?
Can I admit something real quick?
Yeah, sure.
In my studies of the Crusades, which I'll admit has been very small and mostly done out of vampire books, I didn't know that Dalmatia was a place. I never knew why a Dalmatian dog was called a Dalmatian. I was just like, oh, it's because it's got spots called Dalmatian. I was like, oh, that's a place? I feel stupid.
Does Dalmatian mean dots?
No, it doesn't. My point is, I didn't know it meant anything.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I was like, oh, it's Dalmatian dogs. That's why he called that, because it's got spots. No, I was just admitting my stupidity.
But in general, they're calling to the Holy Land, right? That's the point of the crusade, being right. called in, rallied in, send more people, all that stuff. And here's what I want you to know. This book is an invaluable tool if you use it for what they're not saying to use it for. Right, the theme and is the mood is kind of chaos. Right, that's what you have there. If you have a chronicle where you're, especially if you got venture in it, and the point is ambition should coin with this. It's riding the back of this call and dealing with the disasters that come up from it.
Right,
right. One of them was not having enough money, and people just being told to serve in duty. Just, hey, go forward. You'll be paid. Our gold is over here.
Yeah, if you go and you sack this Christian city real quick, you can take the riches from that to pay for what we would have paid you for. And they're like, oh, we can do that? Yeah. It's totally cool. Just go sack that city.
We owe you to take that. We're good.
Yeah. So anyways, the first chapter is kind of a wonkadoo. It's all right, but you as a storyteller, if you read through this, there are dozens of ways that you could improve this to make it more compelling, to use it as the backdrop. Now, if you're not an experienced storyteller, go ahead and give it a try. I personally advise, and this is kind of like a new thing that I've discovered as I start running new games and, you know, getting out of my comfort zone. Doing something like this first chapter with some beginners can help you to go, oh, I would have changed that. Oh, this is how I would have told that story better. So even in a bad situation, you can make lemonade out of lemons. So that's the first chapter. Second chapter is more about what you were talking about earlier, right?
Yeah, the Fiendish Knights. This is basically a story of revenge, more or less. To let you know, why I call this is awesome is because the Fiend Coban is an individual who, if you don't know Norris, he believed in a typical Zemis Voivode conquest, take over and move on. But nor is N-O-R-I-Z is how you pronounce it, or is how you spell it. But the survivor's Coban. And Coban is basically just followed his master, right? Was embraced over conquest and assumed that's what you do because that's what he is. But he was incredibly spiritual, right? Coban is.
Right.
Right. He's highly motivated to be just that, and you can read more about that. But if you're someone who's into the Kodanic sorcery that the Zamis have, Koban's your guy. But his very appearance, one of the most unique things about him is that he has his ribcage that he attached a flesh cloak to. That ribcage is one of his rivals. Right. How pimp is that? That's so much like, I know what you're thinking, Bob's a horror guy, of course it'd be pimp. No! If you're a fan of Vampire, you know the Zamisi clan, like I do, you know that that's prestige. Anybody can look, any Zamis can kill their rivals, that's great. But one of them's going to go, is that the ribcage of the one who actually stood against him? Right. Yes. Yes, it is. And to anger Koban is to risk being attached to his adornment. And that's just how it is. And if you're good enough, and if he values you enough as to being a true opponent, then when he kills you, and he will kill you, he will take a part of you, and he will wear it forever. And that's horrifically beautiful for that clan as a whole. And that is all that is Koban. There's tons about this guy in this book. What's more important is that, well, that there's nothing more important, honestly, in this chapter. It's him. And it talks about how these Zamis actually do war, right? Koban's this way. In here, it'll tell you how they go to a village. There's villages that start disappearing.
Right.
And they're not finding anybody. That's horrific unto itself. And if you roll it out right, that should be scary for anybody playing the game. However, excuse me. However, Koban later comes back, right, in all regalia with those missing villagers. And they have a great piece of art in this book that showcases it. It's him on a crawling throne made of people, right? It's almost insectoid in the way it comes down the mountainside, and he sits in the throne and has this horrific countenance. Is done well, impossibly tall, and yet to his left and right are these war ghouls that are coming with him. And I want you to imagine that this takes place at night,
right?
No canine before or since. Vampires do not war well at night. Now, I know that sounds weird. What I mean by that is, when you think of war, that's thousands and thousands of soldiers taking the field of battle. That's arrows, that's flaming pitch, that's all that. Vampires do none of that.
Right.
They can't. They can only do...
sleeping.
They can only do these mini raids, right? During the day, they can't. At night, they wake up. They got to try to get what men they can that are awake, usually ghouls, and then they're going to go out and wage these shadow wars with whoever. You cannot shadow war with an entire knight army.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And so when he comes to call, he basically wins. That's what it's going to be. However, there are ways around it. Obviously, no matter how bad you are, there's somebody badder. Right. And enough of you band together to do it. But this is what's showing you is how Zamis war. But this book, the way the story is written is like, you could tell this is just another knight.
Right.
This is just another war for Koban.
This is just another scenario.
That's it. Just another guy thought he could be a contender, and guess what? You're not. And you weren't prepared for what I am going to do. And that horror alone tells its tale, and that's in Fiendish Winter. And strangely, I say it's more than fitting for the book feel, which is chaos. I myself was like, yeah, I get there's Vykos in here. I get there's a story of Jezu and, you know, all that nonsense. And Constantinople's tied to it, and there's the Byzantine element. We get that. But they also have an entire book already on Constantinople and everybody, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about this story, is that this story, I think, is a great little chronicle, a great little story for your chronicle. But I didn't really feel that it fit here. And maybe it's more about how good it is, in that you could use it at any time in Transylvania, right? All through this Dark Ages review, which we're almost done with the first leg of Dark Ages, it's all been about these ancient cities, and a lot of it has been about Transylvania and the Zamis and them warring with the Ventru, them warring with the Tremere, them warring with everyone. And this is a story of them warring with themselves. And to me, it felt like this could fit in any Dark Ages story. And then I was like, didn't I play this once? And I felt like I remember distinctly playing this out in a Dark Ages LARP that was run by Beewood. And I can't remember if this is the exact same story, but
no, it is.
Yeah. And I was like, man, I've done this before. And the reason why I know is because I got fucked up on the battlefield by one of these Zemis who grabbed my spine and pulled it through my butthole.
That was Koban.
Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely was Koban.
Like, I was like, oh, that sucks.
Because if you remember, that's the Chronicle where nobody won and everybody loved the game.
Yeah.
Right? Because we set up, it just real quick, the way we did what all players did. We all massed together, but nobody planned.
Right.
You know, I had like a little nest egg of warriors and ideas of what to do, but I betrayed the battlefield, if you recall.
Right.
When Koban took to the field, he didn't accept the basically I tried to make peace. We'll owe you, just relax, we could do it, whatever. And so he returned all my messengers in one gigantic ball. Yeah. Right? Like rolled them down the hill to us and we had to collect it. I didn't know what the hell. So basically we took to the field because us playing Adventure, we all pretended, we'll face Koban. And then everybody took to the opposite. And when Koban came down, we left.
Right.
You know, we were very Welsh in that mentality. You know, like, think of, well, not the Welsh. I thought there was a movie that happened in too.
I think I was playing a Malkavian Crusader, like a Grail Knight or something like that. I don't remember specifically. It was a lot of years ago.
Passage of Time.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely recalled. I was like, man, I could swear I played through this. But anyways, I don't know. It's a really great addition, but I don't think it's in any way, shape, or form necessary to tell it within the context of the rest of this book. So that's my only real criticism of it.
Good enough anyway. But from Fiendish Winter, what's the next one? That's
the third chapter is Dying Embers. And Dying Embers is the fall of Constantinople. It's no spoilers. It's the fall of Constantinople.
If you're me... It's kind of redundant, like, because you know it's coming down already, you know it's going to happen, they tell the fate of it, that it's a fated city doomed to failure, blah, 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 and finally here it is written, right? For that, except, if memory serves, Constantinople was sacked before and survived, and this is the actual fall and takeover.
Yeah, and more so than the fall and the takeover, it is the end of Michael and his great dream.
Right. This is where you learn the fate. And there's an applause in... all over the place for that. Michael is one of my least like characters. I'm already documented. And it's only because for a lot of what you could do in history with the Dark Ages and legacies, and I think that's the point that was missed. I will state that. I think all these books tell great vampires, but they kill them. They give a destiny where this dude dies because of nonsense.
Right.
And it's like, okay. Well, in your game, they don't have to die. And in my game, they don't. But the aspect is that I've proven to myself... that you can write a legacy for one well-told... If your NPC was built good enough and it interacts with players and survives an encounter, what it does later on down the road can be beneficial and entertaining to those players across multiple chronicles and chapters or whatever you call it at home for games that you run from past to present. And that's what I look for. That's what I challenge everybody who plays Dark Ages. Don't just run a Dark Ages game and then go, well, that was that. Scrap, we'll play a new one now. You're going to play a modern game eventually. Save those characters. Take a synopsis at the end, like Dying Embers does in this book, to kind of tell everything up to this point. And that's the takeaway.
Yeah. I think something that's very compelling that for a lot of people might be a no-duh sort of situation, but you have to remember, we're not just talking to you with the experience, but something that can be very fun, like Bob was talking about, is setting down with your players and going, we are going to create a dynasty of characters. You're going to play the Ancient Elder, and then you'll play the Ancilla in the 1400s and the 1500s, you know, the Micah Vykos age characters. And then in the modern day, you're going to play that character's child or what have you. So you can go through this whole process and play these characters at their appropriate power level and see what it's like to build that sort of compelling story throughout centuries.
And I want to add, we haven't said this before. I'll say it now because I always thought it was a duh. There are people who speak in reverence of a lot of these writers, like reverence, like, oh, my God, you know. And it's great to have. They're published. They've done well for themselves, and they're in the book, and they've impacted. The point is, their impact is not to become your new gods of gaming because a lot of the writers don't play game. I mean, I'm just going to say what it is. I mean, we've met a few that do, like definitely Matthew Dawkins, absolutely. And that's awesome that he does, because his insights seem more relevant, and to us, they make sense for a lot of what he says. But some writers are just entertaining writers. And what am I getting at? Basically, they wrote this not to be the end-all, be-all for you.
Right.
They wrote this to assist your imagination in telling your tale with this material. Again, to assist you in telling your tale with the material. So whenever we clown on something, there's someone who goes, I actually use that to great effect.
Right.
And that's the point. Right. And I'm not doing the old adage, to do what you want with it. I'm simply telling you that is what is meant by the end game. That is how you use it. And in this, you take all the piss out of, oh, this guy's garbage what he wrote. This is it. Nah. All it is, if you wouldn't use it for you, don't. Right. And make it your own. I mean, this book fits that.
I feel like we've said it before, but, you know, maybe it bears repeating in that regard. Like, when we talk about a book, we're not saying anything about the author who wrote it. We're just saying how we feel it represents the world that we're playing out of. That's totally it. Like, for instance, I'll mention this. I like the idea of this, like, kind of larger than life Methuselah who looks like an angel out of a stained glass window. That's crazy to me. To me, that doesn't really fit within what's presented in this world, but I still think that's kind of cool. What I think is cooler, though, is that there's this ancient Bali that was embraced who hates him beyond all rationale and is trying to hunt him down and kill him. What I don't like about it is that she's actually a demon who was melded with a bunch of tablets and then diablerized a guy to become a Bali. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But the core of that, the diamond in that coal, is where I find it to be entertaining.
And right? just like that, I'm opposite on that outcome. The very fact that people believe that you can be a Bali and you're going to survive anything to do with hell is folly. It's hubris, utter trash. Here's the deal. It is someone who died, who desperately wanted... Actually, it wasn't even revenge. It was love unrequited. They had an undying love, right? Mikhail and right. Malraya. They were, or Malria, depending on how you want to see it. They were meant to be together from a time before Christianity. And yeah. Because they had it, and there they were, it was a beautiful tale. Michael spurned her and ignored her and all that. And let something very terrible happen to her. Well, she didn't die. Apparently, she had such will that when her hate was parting from this world, something in hell latched onto her and kept her for that
right,
purpose.
Right.
Later on, some foolish ritual was done by a Bali that called up this entity, but the memory of what this demon held onto and what he summoned was such that they melded.
Right.
One could not tell the other, and then by the time the demon figured it out, it could only do it as it was walking around and realized that it was a demon. It wasn't this chick, but this is only after the tablets, right? And you get what it is. That right there is cool. However, no player ever anywhere is going to ever get that cool part of the story.
No, not at all.
That's written for the storyteller. There's no one going to do it. The only way you could do it is if you gave a player a snippet. You're like, you have a premonition. Right. The woman who walks by, burning town, smells of ember, sulfur, and weird rites done in spooky labs. You know, all that jazz.
But that's the point. The point is, this story is kind of like that. It's like, it's a tour of the city getting sacked. It's a tour of the city getting sacked.
If it comes with your dance, that works.
Right. See, because I like to think of the Michael Mary story as like a John Cougar Mellencamp song. That's just like, little ditty of Jack and Diane. No, I'm kidding. But that's basically what this story is. It's a story where your coterie goes through and sees
the city called Constantinople. We all get sacked because nobody got paid. Oh yeah, crusade goes on. Gonna sack this city and then I'm gone. Oh, steal that rock, steal that gold, take it all back and run right home. Sorry. Anyway, I was touched by the cosmos.
That's good. We should record that. Nothing like those timely references, hey? Oh, that song's older than this book. I don't know.
Sorry. Sorry. Okay.
I don't know where to go from there. Damn. Yeah. So basically what I got out of this, and it's not in any way that I don't like it. I like this story. To me, this is the part of the story that actually matters to the Fourth Crusade. this is the relevant information to the vampires, but it's designed to show your coterie of players, how just ridiculous the kindred culture is, in that, or not kindred, the canine culture is, and that they think that they, again, still have any degree of control over the outcome of the situation.
And profoundly, I think it highlights the duality of both. I won't even say duality, that man and vampire are just the same. You know, if you made all these nobles, these knights, these promises, they came in faith. They right. came believing they were doing good works, and then you come to realize they all were just here for wealth.
Yeah.
This is all about greed. Very few felt the call from a genuine place. And because of that, the religion ate itself.
Right.
Right. It gets all the way out here, and that's that. When there was nothing to be had, it's gone. And that is a testament, literal monument of a black eye, if you will, to the church. Because after this, the church does make some strong changes that you can read in Exodus about. Because this is a tragedy.
Right.
It's not even a tragedy. It's an atrocity. It's a self-mutilation. I mean, where's your brotherly love and goodwill and good works and all
never
that?
Got to the Holy Land. Right.
Right. And that's what it talks about. Well, it says the same thing to the Canaanites. The Canaanites are coming along. Same thing.
Yep.
Right, even Coban's warring on his own, you know, and whatnot. It's a tale about the same thing when Jesus and Michael, you know, Michael and Maria. It's about these powerful people. Or in another word, you reap what you sow.
Yep.
That's what this is all about, and that's why it's good.
Yeah. So I don't know. I really liked the story, and I think that my bottom line on this book is. You know, I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning reading through this book last night, this morning, I guess. And all in all, I felt that it was a very compelling book. It suffers from many of the same pitfalls that other chronicles, other modules suffer from, but this is a fully realized book. I think that this would be a great companion piece for a coterie of vampires that you're sending through the Transylvania by Night stories. I think that it would fall right in line there. And it's good because it carries your coterie from 1198 or whatever up to, I think, 1204 is where it finally lets you out, because we are building towards the next generation of Vampire of the Dark Ages material. So, yeah, it's got some stuff in it that I'm just like, no. But all in all, I think it's a good book and it's worth, you know, the investment to add to your Dark Ages game. That's my opinion on it.
It is. There's a backdrop, ideas, templates. I agree with Nate.
Yep. All right. Well, get out there and find yourself a copy of it. 1202 to 1204. So before we go, before we finish up, next week we will be doing the review of Iberia by Night, of which I have no previous interaction with. I don't know anything about other than it's a by night book. And it takes place in Iberia. So should be pretty cool. Yeah. Also, oh, you want to say something, Bob?
Nothing, actually. Okay. You saw my face, and I was like, no.
Also, if you guys follow us, if you support us on Patreon, we are giving away a hard copy physical edition of the new Chicago by Night for V5. All you have to do is go to our Patreon, find the post where I ask you to name your favorite character from Chicago by Night, leave a comment, and you'll be entered. And one of you that leaves a comment will win the end of February, and we will mail you a book. So how awesome is that? If you don't support us, go support us. Leave a comment. You could win. Super cool. And those books are thanks to C.T. Phipps. C.T. Phipps is a longtime supporter of us. He's the author of Straight Out of Fankton and I Was a Teenage Weredeer, and he sent us a buttload of them. So we have a bunch we're going to give away in the months leading up to Gen Con, and a couple that we're going to give away at Gen Con, and that'll be totally awesome. So, all right. What say you, Bob?
I say that's chances to win. A very good book. Fantastic book.
Yeah.
Relevant and to the point.
Also, we have our old Patreon support t-shirts available on utilitymuffinlabs.com. I think we have some smalls and some 3Xs available. If you purchase one in February of any size, then you also could win a free book. So we're giving two away right now. That's physical hard copy Chicago by Night for V5. So get out there, figure it out, and maybe win a book. But yeah, and lastly, if you guys are interested in going to Blood and Betrayal Redemption, which is in April, use our promo code MET25 for your tickets. You get 10% off your purchase, and it helps us out. So that's it. I'm done shilling.
You're done shilling?
I'm done shilling.
All right, I won't stop you. I mean, I'm going to leave it at that. I want that to be what's in the head.
All right. And, you know, guys, if you have any disagreements about our opinion on Bitter Crusade, let us know. We'll read your comment, and we'll answer it accordingly. So until next week, I'm Nathan.
And I am Bob.
And thank you. Goodbye.
Wakanda forever.
Thank you for listening to 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. If you like our podcast and you'd like to help support our show, consider backing us at patreon.com/25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. We offer reward tiers of additional Patreon-only podcasts, t-shirts, and personalized gaming experiences. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and go to our website, utilitymuffinlabs.com, for links to all of our social media, additional podcasts, and more. If you'd like to chat with us, submit a title for review, promote your gaming-related stuff, or anything else you can think of, email me at nathan@utilitymuffinlabs.com. Utility Muffin Labs, consistently rated adequate.